This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I always tell my students, don't think of literature, I call it the broccoli argument. Don't think of it as something that's good for you, that you should do. Just get it down, you know? It should really be something that is, it's not easy. It takes hard work and the barriers to entry are high.
The science of happiness.
Appreciating modern painting.
Dilemmas of modern medicine.
Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War.
The history of jazz.
The artistic genius of Michelangelo.
When intuition fails.
Turning points that changed American history.
The psychology of religion.
The genius of Mozart.
The future of humans.
One Day University. The most acclaimed and popular professors from top colleges, their best lectures, fascinating conversations. Hi, I'm Richard Davies. Let's learn.
I'm an advocate for literature. I think that it's important for political life. I think it helps us.
My name is Joseph Luzzi, and I'm a professor of comparative literature at Bard College. The name of the lecture is Eight Books That Changed the World.
When you think of the experience of just scanning social media and that sense of exhaustion and wasted time you get, right, after an hour of it, you never feel that way after you read a book.
I'm going to start with one of the wonderful things you said in this lecture, which I just loved. Writing is an act of generosity towards the reader.
Thank you for reminding me that, because in a way, I want to just build a little bit on this idea of generosity for the reader by the writer. But I think it goes both ways. I also tell my students and I tell the participants at One Day University that writing and reading are an act of collaboration.
When we talk about literature, I think the thing that we want to think about, the book doesn't exist. It's not like a painting, right? If you look at a painting, it has an inherent beauty in itself, right? It's a physical object. You give it meaning, but it exists as an object in the world. The book is brought to life by the reader. And that's why it's so different than watching television or, you know, you can interpret movies as well. But the book, all the heavy lifting has to be done by the reader. I always tell my students, you're writing a book along with the author. Because if you don't actively engage with it, it doesn't exist. It's just code on a page. And this, I think, is a really amazing thing because it puts so much burden and responsibility on you, your imagination, your rational intellect, your memory, your sense of history and culture. And you bring those all to bear in what one great scholar, Edward Said, said, an act of erudition and sympathy. You know, when you are almost back in the shoes of the author who wrote it.
Without the reader, the book is nothing. And that's why, in a way, reading is so demanding. And that's why, you know, some of the recent statistics show that it may be on the wane, is that it's something that you can't do along with other things. As Jonathan Franzen said, the novelist, you can't read and multitask. It takes up all of your energies. And I actually think in this day and age, the skills that we get from literature will become even more important than ever before. the ability to focus and concentrate, the ability to read deeply, to bring the text to life without succumbing to distractions. This is an incredible challenge today, right? Those who can do it, I think, are going to be, you know, will have a skill that will be very important in this new information economy.
Why?
Because I think that books have shown themselves to be remarkably resilient. I always tell my students, think of a work like Augustine's Confessions. It was written in the late 300s. I think like 398 or 399 AD.
Yeah, some people call it like the first autobiography.
First memoir. Yeah. I mean, imagine, what else do you know from that era? I mean, it's incredibly remote. That book, this memoir, lives on in the tell-all memoir. The Augustine was addicted in his own way to sex and to worldly glory. He had to overcome that. That's a story that's told over and over again in our books today. So the freshness and the modernity of Augustine's memoir, even though it was written over 1,600 years ago, is extraordinary. The fact that some of these books can stay alive, it's really a miracle. Most books disappear very shortly after they're published, right? The scholar at Stanford, Franco Moretti, came up with the term the slaughterhouse of literature, you know, to show that, I mean, the statistics are staggering. I think it's something like only one out of every 200 books lives past their immediate point of publication. Why do those few live on? And the fact that they do is really remarkable. I use the word miracle because somehow they remain relevant and vital with the passing of time. And it's because of the reader. When they stop speaking to the reader, they will disappear.
Your lecture,
yeah,
the 8 books,
yeah,
that changed the world,
yeah,
one, naturally, is the Bible,
which right,
may have changed the world more than anything else.
Right. No matter what you believe, books, right? I'd say think of the Bible as literature, as a collection of stories, independent of your faith system, and just think of its revolutionary impact across the world.
I urge you to read the Bible. It's an incredible piece of literature. It is so unusually written. It was written by many hands. It's at once a collection. It's an anthology. It's a digest. It's about editing. It's about translation. It's about trying to blur the line between life and words. It's about the sacredness of the text. A lot of modern literary criticism, what I do, grew out of the tradition of biblical scholarship, the exegesis, making sense of the words.
You zero in on Genesis.
Right.
As an extraordinary piece of storytelling.
Storytelling. I mean, think about it. Genesis has a specific language, something along the lines, and God created the earth and the heavens, and it was good. And, you know, then he rested on the seventh day. This idea, the way the sentences cascade, the ands, you know, one following the other. We don't talk like that. That's called, and to put my professor hat on for a moment, parataxis, where the sentences don't really logically link the way we speak today with normal syntax. But in that incredible form, you get a rhythm, a flow, and a kind of rhetoric of storytelling that's so memorable, so rich, so unbelievable. And also, think of the characters that are created in Genesis. God is a character.
Everything that God is making is sort of not turning out the way he planned, right? Genesis is origins. Listen to this amazing passage. And the Lord saw that the evil of the human creature was great on the earth, and that every scheme of his heart's devising was only perpetually evil. And the Lord regretted having made the human on earth, and was grieved to the heart. And the Lord said, I will wipe out the human race I created from the face of the earth, from human to cattle to crawling thing to the fowl of heavens, for I regret that I have made them. What a passage. The idea of God as a character who's upset over his creation. It's one of the most grounding images and descriptions of what supposedly an untouchable, unknowable, surpassingly powerful deity. And the collection of people who wrote Genesis give us to him, it's a he, right? In all his psychological, in this context, I don't know what it really is. In all the psychological complexity, this image of God grieving to the heart is to me a powerful example of how we create character in the Bible.
That's what literature does. Whether it's, you know, a realist novel from the 1800s or a contemporary novel from yesterday or the Genesis, you're talking about these unbelievably rich characters like God, like Joseph, like Adam and Eve. I mean, think of Adam and Eve, you know. They live in paradise, but they choose to violate the terms of paradise to taste from the tree of knowledge. Why? Do they prefer a life with hardship if it means getting to knowledge? Is it just a human tendency to not be able to resist temptation? It raises all these incredible psychological issues and concerns that can speak to you no matter what your faith is.
We've been teasing our listeners a little, so let's taste from the tree of your lecture and mention the eight books. The other book from ancient times is the Odyssey.
Right. I you know, of course, a list like this is highly selective, highly idiosyncratic, and more of a gesture towards the books that have been incredibly meaningful to me and the books that I feel have had the lasting impact. The whole point is that I want my eight to stimulate you, our listeners, our audience members, to make their own list of eight books.
Okay, so we got The Odyssey by Homer.
Yeah,
we got the Bible.
I'm not evading the question.
And then
that wasn't a literary version of a filibuster. I have the...
And then you jump, you fast forward to the 14th century with Dante.
I chose
Dante.
Dante's my main man, the person I've studied and written about probably more than anyone. I chose Genesis because of its incredible impact of the Bible in all cultures, all religions. I chose the Odyssey because it's a story of a hero's return that is as relevant today as it was when it was written centuries before the birth of Christ. I chose Dante because of its unbelievable tension between the spiritual world and the secular world. Dante was writing as a Christian, but it's about the way earthly history and the demands of the soul come into conflict. Those are my first three.
And this is right on the cusp of the Middle Ages, the
yes.
age of belief, and then the age of reason, the Renaissance.
And then the Renaissance, we naturally flow into the person I felt I had to choose one from because he shaped the English language. He shaped the language you and I are speaking in now, Shakespeare. Shakespeare is the opposite in a way of Dante. If Dante is very scholarly, very steeped in doctrine, and very difficult to just pick up and read, Shakespeare, once you learn the little verbal tics, once you learn the expressions, is actually not that difficult.
A lot of Shakespeare's stuff is refashioned, recycled stuff. Like Romeo and Juliet was an Italian Renaissance tale, a very boring one. Shakespeare made it magical. He was no scholar. He was just really an incredibly gifted psychologist, the most extraordinary capacity to use language, but he was not someone who was buried, his nose buried in books. He was a businessman trying to get people to his theater and make compelling works of art that were accessible. We have to remember that, right? Shakespeare was Shakespeare. I know you've heard the rumors. The main argument against Shakespeare's being the author of his own plays was that how could someone with very little education write as he did? But that's absurd. Michelangelo didn't go to, you know, art school. He apprenticed. We can't apply anachronistically our idea just because Shakespeare didn't go to Oxford and Cambridge that he couldn't have written these plays is absolutely silly.
If my list gives the lie to anything, it's this: the idea that you can't be read by many and a brilliant writer, because Shakespeare could not have been more popular in his day. He's still in college curricula all over the country, and he was a very successful theater impresario, theater merchant. So, you know, I think that's part of his appeal. He was what I call accessible genius. He wasn't trying to say things in a rarefied way. He was trying to get people into his theater and communicate with his audience, and he somehow did it in a way of, you know, artistic brilliance.
Okay, we got four books so far.
So moving closer to today, I thought the whole point of my lecture is to get people reading. So I didn't want to, you know, give them all. I could have chosen, you know, Don Quixote. I could have chosen Montaigne, a lot of older texts. But I wanted to come close to the present to find works that are more relevant to today. So in that, and especially our the American question, American identity, United States writers. So I chose a British author, Virginia Woolf, because I believe that she wrote an extraordinary book about many things. But above all, I would say it gives us an incredibly complex model of female identity. That book is To the Lighthouse. Our fifth book, our last three are all American books and all in dialogue with one another in their own ways. I chose Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, Joseph Heller's Catch-22, and Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. And they're all part of what I consider the quest for the great American novel. A theorist in the late 19th century, John William DeForest, came up with the term the great American novel. And I still think there is this desire in writers to kind of capture the complexities of American identity and get it on the printed page. And it's not just the three I mentioned, but we see this in Philip Roth, Toni Morrison, so many, Mark Twain, so many writers who kind of embraced the riddle and enigma of American identity.
Make the case for why reading literature matters so much.
You know, Richard, the more I think about it, the more important than the choice of eight books, my version of eight books versus yours versus someone else's, it's really what do they have in common? What do all great books, what does all great literature have in common? And I would focus on four things. One, great literature is a passport to alternate worlds. You know, I grew up in a working class Italian-American family. My family immigrated. We didn't have a lot of money. My parents had a grade school education. There were no books in our house. In fact, I'm kind of an unlikely person to be giving a lecture on eight books to read, because when I was growing up, my mom, whenever she saw me with a book, she'd say in her dialect, you know, "That's a su libro, te fa mal a la testa." You know, "Put that book down. It's going to give you a headache." As if reading would give me a headache, you know. But even though we didn't have money, we didn't travel, we had a local library. And by going to the library, I could read about Rabelais and Renaissance France. I could read about F. Scott Fitzgerald in the 1920s during Prohibition. I could travel anywhere. Literature gave me alternate worlds. It gives every reader alternate worlds, not just in the present, but you can go back in the past. Aristotle said brilliantly, "History tells us what happened. Poetry gives us what could have, what should have happened, a universal history. It moves beyond the contingent into the universal, so that when you read F. Scott Fitzgerald's The Great Gatsby, you can see what life was like in the 1920s. You can see the air of the parties that Gatsby threw is rife with the sense and the music of that era. It brings it to life just as richly as any historian could.
So the first facet of these great books is they're a passport to alternate worlds.
Absolutely.
The second one.
The second one is literature is the marriage of form and content. In other words,
how you say something is just as important as what you say. That's really the biggest difference between literature and other forms of writing. You can read wonderful history, you can read wonderful philosophy, but literature is all about the surface texture of the words. It's almost like music. When you become a good reader, you start to hear the notes of what's on the page. Form and content are one. You know, there's a little line from Hamlet. When we first meet Hamlet, Claudius introduces him, and he's like, "My son, Hamlet." He's not really, you know, it's his nephew, but he's become his son because he's married Gertrude. And Hamlet, in reply to this line, he says, "A little more than kin and less than kind. Too much family, too little good behavior," right? It would lose an effect if he just said, "You're not a very good uncle. You shouldn't have married my mom," right? "You shouldn't have killed my dad either," while you're at it. It's about this kind of artful crafting of language thematically. You know, my students always say, gosh, this was an A paper. How could you have given it a C? And I say, you know, the idea may have been an A, but the writing was a D, so we split the difference.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
It's about the joy and beauty of hearing the words. You do podcasts. You know what that's about, right? The joy of language, how language has a life of its own. And that's what literature gives us.
Now that we've heard your first two qualities, let's go to the third.
I think the third one is what I call humanity's diary. By that, I mean literature gives us insights into the way people lived, and I think in a way that no other form of expression can.
Well, because there's so much empathy involved.
So much empathy.
It puts you right alongside a character from a different time, a different place, a different culture.
Think of To the Lighthouse. It's about a woman. Basically, you know, she's a housewife. She doesn't work. She raises an enormous family, many children. That person's voice would be very hard to hear in the public back then, because her husband is a philosopher. He's very famous. His word is out there everywhere. But she's at home. She's a domestic creature. And yet Virginia Woolf takes us inside her head, and she gives these incredibly lush descriptions of her inner life. Where else can we get that but literature? I tell my students it's like a fossil, an imprint, but not in the physical world, but of the human spirit.
And you have this lovely phrase that literature is the texture of life beyond the facts.
That's exactly what I think this idea of humanity's diary gives us.
So we're up to the fourth.
The fourth one is my most, I would say, coded one. I call it finding a fig tree of your own. By that, I mean, going back to St. Augustine, who wrote the Confessions in the late 300s, Augustine has this life-changing experience basically under a fig tree, where he's having this breakdown, true like spiritual crisis, and he hears a voice saying, tole legge, which is Latin for pick it up and read. So he reaches for a book, happens to be a Bible, and he finds the passage that enables him to break his addiction with sex, with pleasures of the flesh, with worldly ambition.
Sometimes we need external help to break a habit, to break a pattern. For Augustine, it came in the form of picking up a book and reading about a path in life that he needed to take. This is very dramatic, of course, but I think we all have those moments where we're reading something and it can really have an impact on who we are, our sense of the world, our sense of someone we know or someone we thought we knew, our sense of our own past. I think it's something that makes it literature as like a companion that you go through life with, and that at certain times can change that life.
We've all, or many of us, have had those moments as readers where we read something and we feel the book is speaking directly to us, our own private fig tree moment. In a way, that's my most important gift of reading, that you can have that moment where reading changes your life.
Now, we're doing this podcast, and we're talking about yeah. your lecture. We've given people a taste of what you're talking about.
Right.
Why should they go and see you?
Because every talk has, I suppose, has its aim, right? Mine is very simple. It's not for them to leave and say, wow, Professor Luzzi had some really great... I mean, I hope they think I have good insights on the books. But my aim is very simple. I want you to leave my talk and go read a book. If you do that, then the talk succeeded.
Why should we read? Why should we read the great books? Because of this power of storytelling. To bring people separated by culture, politics, identity, together into that universal space where they can recognize each other as human beings and feel each other's pain while enjoying the pleasure of great stories.
That's great. Thank
great.
You.
That was really enjoyable.
I'm Richard Davies. Thanks for listening. Sign up on our website, onedayu.com, to become a member and access over 600 full-length video lectures from the world's finest professors.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.